is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, as the world is certainly a little topsy-turvy today, folks, on the heels of the FBI executing a warrant and search on the home of Donald Trump down there in Florida. Here, a little bit closer to home, where we are having a look inside the formation of the new party, political party, Forward, as a new anti-extremist political party that's comprised of leading national Democrats, Republicans, and independents. And we've got two of its leaders joining us in our conversation to talk about not just what's happening in Florida and how that is playing into the turmoil in our democracy, but also about the viability of a third party and whether or not the seeds are being properly sown and germinated in a way that this can not only grow, but be sustained. So I'm looking forward to, and I'm sure you will enjoy our conversation with Miles Taylor, who is a public policy leader, former chief of staff at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and the current co-CEO of Forward, and former congressman from Pennsylvania, Joe Sestak. He's also a former three-star admiral, White House director of defense policy, and presidential candidate, and one of the leaders of Forward. All of that and great conversation coming up on the Michael Steele podcast right after this. Well, this is exciting times. There's no doubt on a whole number of levels. Certainly in light of what the FBI and the Department of Justice are engaged in, but even in the political world beyond Donald Trump, there's excitement and energy, as I noted earlier, with the formation of an emerging party, the Forward Party. And it's just really excited to have two buddies here to talk about that in Miles Taylor and Joe Sestak, who is both of whom are poised to sort of help us walk through this space as Democrat. And Miles, you're a former Republican, recently removed, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
I am indeed a former Republican, proud of it. And Michael, I'm going to do everything in my power to lure you over to the light side. I've been just tugging at you. Although I'll say, in your defense, boy, it drives them crazy that you're still in the Republican Party.
Oh, it does, trust me.
And I admire you for it.
I get cussed out all the time, Joe. It's hysterical. It's like, well, why don't you just leave? I said, because it pisses you off that I'm still here. But anyway, I think that given national events right now, it's a perfect setup to what the Forward Party is all about, and what you guys are looking to do. So why don't we begin, before we get into the nitty gritty of the FBI warrants and Forward more generically, give us a sense of what Forward is and what Forward isn't. Because I think that initially, some folks may have been confused. They thought, oh, we got a third party starting right today. And then other people like, well, I think it's kind of coming down the road. So give us a sense of what it is, what does it stand for, how you see it changing the political landscape. So Miles, I'll begin with you. And then, Joe, just jump in and we'll just get into the conversation.
Yeah, appreciate you having us, Michael. I'd say this. We had three different organizations, national organizations, one that came from the center right, one that came from the center left, and the centrist organizations that have merged really to create the launch pad for a new party in the United States. No one who's working on this effort thinks that all of a sudden the new party now exists. Mm-hmm. This is the type of thing that takes many years. So in merging these three organizations, what we've done is created that launch pad. And now we're trying to go design the rocket ship, and designing a rocket ship that can go, you know, take off and give people a new option in the American political system. That's going to take quite some time. So the Forward Party is just getting started, and we're entering what I would characterize as the building phase. And there's going to be a concerted effort over the next year between now and next summer, when we plan for there to be a big national event, a convention of sorts, to reach liftoff. And part of that process is going nationwide, hearing from Americans on what they want to see, why they want a new party, bringing people on board, recruiting candidates, and really starting to get the critical legal structures in place across the country to start creating a new party. But at the end of the day, what this is an outgrowth of the mass popular demand for another choice. I mean, right. You know, we've talked about this a lot of times, Michael. I've got unlimited choice in my life and whatever I want, clothes and rideshare and food. Ironically, the one place I don't have choice and competition is in my democracy. And we have two major parties that are increasingly outdated and not representative of the majority. I mean, one way to think of it is we've got the 10% fringes making decisions for 90% of this country. And no one's got to take that, you know, that for me, the voters themselves are basically saying that. I mean, they are screaming for alternatives. A majority of the country basically now says they're neither a Democrat or a Republican. And even 2/3 of Republicans and Democrats say they would welcome a new party and they would vote for it. People want more choice. They want new choices. So what we're trying to do here is kick off a process to build a new choice. And importantly, a choice that can go make sure that we have common sense leaders elected in key places. What I worry about, especially from the party I came from, is the rise of political extremists in this country. And if our only option is to hope that everywhere a far right Trumpian extremist runs, that the Democrats can beat them, then we're setting ourselves up for failure. Because I hate to break it to folks, the Democrats can't beat these Trumpers everywhere. And I worry that we're going to see in November a whole bunch of these mini Trumps elected in gubernatorial races and state representative races, congressional races. So it is, as part of that fight, we're introducing a new tool into the toolkit, is the ability in some of these places to go run a sensible person as an independent, as a forward candidate against one of those extremists, in a place where the Democrats can't win. So that's something tactically I think will be really useful about this, is it's going to be a new tool in the pro-democracy toolkit.
Joe, you're a Democrat, well-regarded member, now former member, leader in the Democratic Party, teaming up with this wayward Republican in Miles Taylor, who's a good brother. But you know, it comes from a conservative philosophical bent, somewhat. And how do you see Forward being the minister at that political altar to marry these differing political views and ideologies and narratives into something that can grow and be sustained in the long term?
Yeah, and part of that, to begin with, if I could just say why I got into this venture.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's because I wore the cloth of our nation for 31 years in the U.S. Navy. And all kinds of people from everywhere come into the service. You live with them, you work with them, you eat with them, you go to war with them. So when I got out and became a Democrat representative for a 2-1, nearly 2-1 Republican congressional district, Michael, I felt right at home. Mm-hmm. That's the demographic makeup, the political makeup of the military. And, you know, the morning after my very first victory, I called up a guy named Charlie. He was an old crusty Marine. He headed the Republican Party in my district. And I asked Charlie, can I come on over for a cup of coffee? For me, coming out of the military, it was just knocking the chief petty officer's off. Right. Say, I'm the new captain. How about let me have a cuppa with you?
Right.
But I did that dialogue listening throughout the district, Republican, Democrat, Independent, didn't matter. And then I got reelected by 20 points in this nearly 2-to-1 Republican district, and I didn't put up one campaign ad. And so to me, the lesson, as I've watched the dynamics over the last few years, is, and probably even a little more than that, is that if we're going to sustain a democracy, differences have got to be resolved by a dialogue, by listening, by eventually a consensus. And as you look back and forth, even with the issue today, that's not what happens with our leadership. They do the exact opposite of dialogue. They almost divide us into two camps. And then each one defines the others from pretty small prism of ideological and cultural issues. And because our leadership seemed to more and more foster this battleground almost of us against them, then all you see going back and forth is this artillery barrage of these single-minded issues that the din of which I think drowns out what truly, truly is the will of the people and the issues that most affect them day in and day out. So today, it used to be I worried about the distrust between Republicans and Democrats. It's more than that today. I really do worry, extremely worry a lot about the loss of trust in the very democratic system we have. So for me, Michael, it is today's single divisive issue, much like slavery was the one issue that a third party called the Republican Party formed at a similar divisive moment, that I strongly feel it's this erosion of trust. It is this loss of trust that drove me towards saying, can this party give us leaders who can emerge, that can regain the trust of Americans, because perhaps a new order of competence comes about where they're focused on pragmatic solutions, not ideological division. And once again, there's a sense of unity within America. To me, that's the real issue here. Are there other issues that we can then expand and build upon? Well, you know, in the military, you say amateurs do tactics, experts do logistics. So after I got called from the top leadership of the party about considering joining it, I went and talked to the staffers, and because I want to know what's under the hood. It's just right. The background. What's the funding you have? And is it, can you bet on the come it's going to be there? How many staffers who are paid do you have? Because ideas are great. You know, you can think the unthinkable and fathom the unfathomable, but you better be able to pay cash.
Right.
And so they actually have that out there with a very designated plan. But to me, if this has one great deficit in America that doesn't get addressed, it's this deficit of trust. And if you have leaders like that, then you begin to trust one another and work on the other issues as you begin having states coming aboard on the ballots.
How does all of this pull itself together? You've got three very different organizations, the Forward Party founded by Andrew Yang, into which the other two organizations merged, one of which I was involved with my friend Miles on the RAM organization. And then of course, David Jolly's organization, SAM, which again, each of which represents a very different approach politically. How do you see, you know, the Renew America movement and its tenets, which tend to be a bit more centrist in its orientation, with a conservative, you know, sort of underbelly to it. And of course, the SAM organization, Serve America movement, you know, with David Jolly, a former member of Congress, which again has these elements to it. How does all this kind of work, given the history of third parties in our nation, one, and two, the way the system is designed, which actually answers the question why there's not been a successful third party movement. They don't want you. The Democrats and Republicans deliberately designed the system not to have a third party. The rules in the various states, the 50 states and the American territories, are not aligned with the idea of opening up the political process. Why does this succeed where others seem to have failed?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll jump in, and Joe would love your thoughts on this front. Michael, you said something really powerful just now. They don't want you. And that's the leaders of the two major parties. They don't want this. Who does want this? By and large, the American people. And we're not talking about six or seven people. We are literally talking a majority of this country is desperate for new options. You know, something struck me the other day. I read a piece. Jonah Goldberg was commenting about the emergence of Forward. And I actually never thought I'd see Jonah Goldberg, a lifelong conservative, say what he said in that piece. And he said he thought that more than any other time in his lifetime, the country was ripe for the emergence of some kind of third force. And I think that's a sentiment that's really, really widely shared. I know that three people on this podcast right now have all had that conversation mm-hmm. a countless number of times with our friends or family. We sit at the dinner table and say, could we just get another option?
Right.
Since we've had many of those conversations, I think our political system has got more and more extreme for exactly the reasons you note, Michael, is the two major parties, both of them have tried to solidify their gains by making red states redder and blue states bluer so that it's harder for anyone to come disrupt that system. That's really frustrating to folks. And I think you're starting to see that frustration boil over. So a couple of things that have changed. A lot of third parties have failed in the past. And Michael, you've heard me use the analogy. I think that there's a graveyard of failed third parties that stretches all the way to the horizon. And part of the reason of that is one, demand. There hasn't been demand, but two are the structural barriers. And that is everything from gerrymandering to closed primaries. The system has been designed to make it really hard for other choices to emerge. A couple things have changed pretty dramatically. And you know, the people that I read out there in this space, the democracy scholars I read, the Lee Drutmans of the world and Larry Diamond and Jonathan Haidt, a lot of these folks were of the same view 10 years ago. If you go read their scholarship and saying, third parties aren't really plausible. A lot of them have started to shift their perspective and say there actually really is an opening now because the sentiment has changed. So the demand side of this equation has changed. People have gone from not being interested in third parties to being extremely interested in having another option. And two, there's a really interesting and exciting movement underway in this country to engage in democracy reform. And like a lot of other big movements you've seen throughout history, it starts very, very slow, and then it happens all at once. And you're seeing some of these democracy reforms emerge, but crucially, it's going to be very hard for a third party, a new party, to thrive and be successful until we break down more of those barriers. So as Joe alluded to earlier, one of the foundational elements and causes of this new party is democracy reform, is defending our country and opening up the system to give people more choices. So that's why we think this is different. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I want to break in on that point because I think it's important, because it really speaks to an underlying issue / concern / reality that emerges. People wanting democracy reform is one thing, because they all have a fundamental understanding of what that is. And that reform is basically, can we just do rule of law? Can we just do, three branches of government? You know, the civics lessons that we were all taught before they stopped teaching it. They want to return to that. They want the reestablishment of it. They don't want to see the deconstruction of the administrative state as articulated by Bannon and Trump when they came into power. So there is this sense of a return to that. And I think everyone is pretty much on par. But the first point you made about, there's this overwhelming desire for a third party. And you're absolutely right. The polling shows that now, and I would agree, is the perfect mix of or combination of forces coming together to create that space. But here's the rub. When you peel back on that and you start asking people, what does that look like? Then it becomes a little bit murky. And I think you've probably seen some of that and heard some of that from the launch of this effort a few weeks ago. where people, depending again on their political perspective, is saying, oh, this is just a mechanism to get Republicans elected, you know, to cause Democrats to, you know, split the vote. Or, you know, this is, you know, an Andrew Yang presidential bid. I'm not touching this. So people then are bringing their political baggage to this conversation. So whereas the democracy conversation is much more open, everybody's like, yay, let's link arms, we love democracy. The politics suddenly goes, well, I don't know if I'm gonna link arms with you because the result could be something different from what I want. Do you think it's important to lay down a longer runway, a stronger predicate for voters to understand exactly what this is, what its philosophical orientation is, to avoid some of that, some of the politics that can muck it up? Are you guys just like, all right, Wild Wild West, baby, let's roll, see what we get?
Well, you got it. Joe, I'd love your response to this. I would just add one thing, Michael, is to say, you answered that question for me at the beginning by noting that we're building, right? The Forward Party's not on the ballot in the midterms.
Right.
And the Forward Party's not running a presidential candidate in 2024. You know, that those are not the focuses of the organization. But if there's widespread agreement, we need something new. Well, then where do you start? You got to start, and you got to start somewhere. And the reason why we're starting,
by people telling you what they want?
That's exactly what we're doing. I'm glad you said that.
And what have they told you specifically that they wanted that this banner encapsulates for them their orientation? Because what the one thing I've learned as a county chairman, state chairman, and national chairman is and Joe, you know this as someone who's been on the ballot, that your constituency is fickle as hell, right? And there is no easy pathway to really discerning their utmost desires. But what you have to do is kind of patchwork it together to get a better understanding of where they'd like to go, what they want. You know, we want these types of reforms, we want this in taxes or not, et cetera. But this is different. This party is different from policy, because despite what some people may think, politics is personal. And so it is a reflection of what I believe and who I am and who I want to hang out with and who I want to align with. What landscape or portrait are you painting that will have people feel that thing that lets them go, this is where I can move from the Democratic Party to join Forward. This is how I can move from the Republican Party and have a Democrat who is, you know, pick an issue on that side and a Republican who pick the same issues on that side, feel that they can coexist in this space without having to get tribal about it.
Yeah, if I could, Michael, first, I think you're missing just one party that succeeded that was a third party. And it started on one issue, as I mentioned, and that's your party, the Republican Party. You had the Whigs, you had the Democrats.
Right.
All of a sudden, in a moment, on one issue, we don't want slavery.
But you didn't have Twitter and Facebook.
Oh, absolutely true.
So it was a lot easier to make that case.
Absolutely, and that's why.
Because the country, by and large, couldn't read and didn't know about it until after the fact.
Absolutely, but that's the reason Martin Luther was able to overthrow the Catholic Church with the Lutheran Church, because he was the first to use the Twitter back then of printing.
Right.
To me, when I would go, stop complaining about it. It's a new means, learn how to handle it better. To me,
right.
It's just
exactly.
But number two, if I could. I had in my first 2 years, 20 pieces of bipartisan legislation, amendments, all but three were bills passed, from an elder abuse bill to forgiving student loans, $10,000 for occupational therapists, and a variety of things like that. Now, they weren't the new healthcare plan, but I would just go across to a Republican who was an orthopedic surgeon, take them out to see our wounded warriors,
mm-hmm.
And on the way back said, you know, there's 10% deficit of occupational therapists in the nation. But there's a part of law, if we show people that, we can forgive them $10,000. And oh, by the way, it helps in autistic children. I bring that up because when I was running for president out there in Iowa, oh my gosh, you go ahead out there and hear the Democratic Party's worried about, and understandable, but forgiving college loans. So I run in the parades back and forth, shake every single hand. Because I do agree with you, Michael. There's going to have to be some stepping stones put out here.
Right.
Of what people want and need.
Right.
And I ran over and shook the last woman's hand. I say, hey, by the way, as I stood there, she offered me a drink. I said, what do you do? She says, I'm a digital agronomist. I said, what the heck's that? She said, I'm making sure all those tractors go back and forth and we don't need people driving them anymore. They're going to be autonomous. So what happens to the people who work and drive them? We put less than any other developed nation to training and retraining. And you have people in those rural counties who gave us energy over the deck years. You have people who gave us food, agriculture over the years. And you know what? They also dominate in serving in our military.
Right.
And all of a sudden their livelihoods are falling apart. You go out there in Iowa, they used to, before I got there, 5 years before, 24 private hospitals. Now they're down to 17 the year I was there. And within 40 years, five more were going to fail. And all of a sudden, it's sort of like Pink in her song, what about us?
Right.
So the key here is, I think eventually, you're right. We're going to have to find out common wants and needs of what we both want to claim. That in the old, the Democrats are going to have to look in the rearview mirror, the blue collar worker.
Right.
That's who has right now, increasingly in the rurals, the Republican Party. And you find, I believe, those issues like that. I mean, take Medicare for All, purely 100% based upon private hospitals. Not a bad idea. Except, how are you going to get a private hospital to go back with those five disappeared from in Iowa?
Yeah, no.
And so how do you tend to say, hey, I do understand you, farmer out there? And so my point on this is, the key is, I'm in this because we've lost trust, but I've lost trust because no one has a dialogue with the other side of the people. Man, I'm walking across Pennsylvania when I ran for Senate my second time to show that, contrary, when I first get into politics, everybody want to know, who's this Navy Admiral? Mm-hmm. Aren't you supposed to be us on the Republican side? You know, you don't belong over there. Who are right. you? What is, you know, et cetera. But I told Schumer when he called me, the senator, and said, stop, just go fundraise. Said, oh, no, Senator, you don't understand. People today want to know, not if they know me, but I know them. And so, yes, I do think eventually you're going to have issues like that. I work with the occupational therapist or an elder abuse. And so to me, I do believe that we have to identify those issues that people are being hidden by this din of going back and forth. And we're going to investigate you tomorrow if you investigate Trump today. We got to get away from that. And so I believe a person like Joe Manchin, if he was a third party person, he would wield such power. And that's why eventually we have to get one person in a significantly elected, I believe,
right.
who is able to wield because of the tightness of how it is. And soon people begin to see that he can work with both parties and bring about a consensus. Otherwise, we will move forward.
So on that point, so you just triggered the former county chairman in me and the former state chairman in me, because I've always argued that folks who approach, and Miles knows this because it's one of the first conversations we had a while back in talking about this idea, was I've always believed that the third party movement, such as it is in this country or such as it has been, has always started in the wrong place. It's always started, oh, let's run someone for president, right? Whether it's 92 or whatever, right? And we're gonna build from there. And my response to that was, no, you're asking people to change their voting behavior. And they're just not gonna do that in a cycle. That's just not how voters work. They just don't wake up and go, oh, I like him, I'm gonna go vote for him, but he's not a Democrat or a Republican. Oh, well, okay, never mind. That's basically how that conversation goes. You can get 15, 17, 18% of the vote nationally, but you need a hell of a lot more than that. And a lot of it for me starts at the grassroots level. The way you begin to your very well-made point of getting that leadership developed and moving the voters in, along with you around the idea that, well, you know, these guys are the first ones to actually listen to what I'm saying, so actually express what I'm concerned about, is those candidates, or are those candidates that run for county executive, state rep, mayor, dog catcher, right? Sheriff. Those local offices is where you begin to change people's approach and their views on politics. I did that here in my own county when, you know, we worked some initiatives as when I was a county chairman. Now, remind you, I'm in a county of 800,000 people, 58,000 of whom are registered Republicans, right? So there's not a whole lot of room I get to play with. But yet when it came to certain tax issues that the county executive wanted to impose on folks and other issues, creating that space in which I got them to vote with us on an issue that they would otherwise not support because they would have a preconceived idea of what Republicans think about taxes and, you know, tax, they only want to give money to the rich. No, we want to give money back to you middle-class homeowners who just bought that $500,000 house that they want to tax, right? And it changed the dynamic. So how do you go about, I mean, do you agree with me that the emphasis should be placed on building from the bottom up, getting candidates who are identifiable across the country with the party effort, as opposed to the big bling of, oh, we're running someone for president in 2028 or whatever. I think you have longer term success when you look out across the country and see 57 or six well-established national parties, right? Now, understand, I know they're not 56 states, folks. I'm not doing that. But there are territories. We got Guam. We got Puerto Rico. We've got, you know, so they also vote in U.S. elections. So the 50 states plus the territories where you're organized, you have people in place who identify with your politics and are willing to put their name on the ballot for these local offices, suddenly changing the way voters are behaving. And so by the time you get to next thing you know, you've got a forward governor in three or four states. You've got mayors in cities like Chicago and Washington, D.C., or in Montgomery County here in Maryland. And you've got, you know, representation in legislatures that are beginning to force legislatures to change the way they're operating when it comes to redistricting, when it comes to tax policy, when it comes to healthcare policy, because you now got 10, 15, 20% of your legislature are forward members who have a bipartisan view of governing. What do you think of that as a means to building that momentum for the party? Because I know, and Andrew and Miles knows, I've said this, my fear is that everyone wants to rush to do the big, woo, let's do that. It falls flat and everybody goes, oh, well, that didn't work, and walk away. Mm-hmm. As opposed to being able to make the case for, you know how many governors we got? You know how many state reps we have across the country? Yeah, et cetera, et cetera. So you're pointing to these vignettes of success that sort of build.
Yeah, Joe.
That was a long question, but well, you get where I'm going.
Joe, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I think Michael Steele just had the most successful audition for national co-chair of Forward Party I've ever heard. I can't think of a single thing you just said I disagree with. And so, you know, what I would say, Michael, is that's absolutely how it has to be done. Now, that, you know, Joe's point about a big leader in the presidential, I think probably all three of us agree, if there was a black swan scenario where you had two really divisive major party candidates and you had a unity ticket emerge, it's a very unlikely scenario. It's you know, the super Hail Mary.
Right.
If it happened, right, you know, that person getting elected does sort of automatically become the leader of a new party. It's sort of the fastest, biggest way for it to happen. Also, probably the unlikeliest given the two-party system. But at Forward, that's starting from the ground up is the way we're thinking about this, is how do we get out there and go engage people who are running in those races that are close to the people, mm-hmm. state reps and mayors, and give them a new lane to go enter politics. And you asked a question earlier about what's the thing we're hearing from people, and we're just starting this national building tour, because really this needs to be built by people. But I think the most common thing that we're hearing out there is folks are really tired of political extremism. They're tired of the division. In fact, the number one thing we hear in focus groups is whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, they're so frustrated that politics has become so personal. It's dividing their families. It's dividing them from their neighbors. They want to see a political party whose starting point, that one issue that Joe mentioned, whose starting point is, we're going to leave out the extremes from the conversation, and we're going to find a majority issue on every single major issue from the most controversial to the most mundane. Because surprisingly, and most folks might be surprised to know this, whether it's guns or abortion or climate change, there actually is a majority American view on each of those that's quite sensible and practical and actionable. But the extremes have really held us back. And I want to give one example of just how my thinking changed on this that you've probably heard before, Michael, when we've been in other settings. You know, I came up in politics just as a young congressional page on the House floor. I spent a year running errands for people like Joe when he was a congressman as a page. And it's basically the best front row seat to democracy there possibly is. The little page desk sits in the back of the House chamber, and you've got this view that no American had. And that was immediately post 9/11 that I sat at that desk, and I got to see what I thought was how democracy worked, an extraordinary bipartisanship, people literally crossing the aisle there on the House floor to work together and pass sweeping bills to protect the country. That's what I saw when I came up in politics sitting at that desk. On January 6th, there's an image that will forever be seared in my mind, is that page desk was pushed in front of the doors of the House chamber to prevent it from being stormed by insurrectionists who were incited by a president who had publicly branded me a traitor as a Republican for suggesting someone else should lead the party. We went from a country post 9/11 that was united and working in bipartisan fashion to one so deeply divided that a group of people felt like they could storm the Capitol and overturn a free and fair election. That was not an aberration. It was not an aberration. It's indicative of the deeper divisive forces in our politics. So for me, really, one of the reasons getting involved in this that was top of mind was, how do we prevent modern civil war in this country? And that means giving people a pressure relief valve in politics and creating vehicles to bring more common sense leaders into government. So, you know, Joe, I don't know if you had a similar experience in watching the divisiveness, you know, expand in the body you once served in as a member of Congress. But for me, that really put the exclamation point on it, is to see that we weren't getting things done anymore in Washington. Not only that, I worry that this November, some of those people who tried to storm the Capitol from the outside have learned the wrong lesson. Instead of going to jail, a bunch of them are now running for Congress to go continue the coup from the inside. That's how bad it's getting. And another reason why we just need more options in our political system.
If I could, a couple comments. First off, Michael, you were right. When I said that after I got this call, would you be interested in Forward, I said I went down to the staff level and to find out exactly how you're going to approach this. And that's what impressed me, is the first year we're going to just focus on these states. But we're not shooting for the presidential race even in 2024. Miles, you even said that to me. Mm-hmm. And we are trying to move up. Now, whether it's state legislator or others, they'll decide where they can. But we also have to keep in mind, second, that I used to try to write a thank you note to anybody who ran in Pennsylvania, who was, you know, Democratic Party. I was astonished after the first race that about 65% of the races didn't have a Democrat running because they were so heavily Republican.
Right.
It didn't even fill in for the school board.
That's how it was in my backyard. Yeah.
That's how it is. Couldn't
find Republicans because it was heavily Democratic. Right.
So this is a good opportunity to step in and you're talking about one party rule right now. And so to have another party moves in your way of going is actually another reason why I was taken with this grass up approach. Now, I love John Anderson. I thought it was great because that's how I felt. An independent happens to be a Democrat, you know? Right. And, but still, I think you're spot on. You have to build up, you have to build the ship before the crew gets on and has a captain that takes them into, you know, the journey of whatever. And so I do think that's overall important, but to the Miles point, I remember getting down there. Now remember, I was right out of the Navy, 31 years, man, I went up to tell them I was about to run, and it was a payback tour for my nation because my daughter had brain cancer. Yeah. And I just wanted to pay back that the healthcare I had, and I was going to run on national security. It begins at home, which is health security. You know, it took Romney's plan that he hadn't gotten passed yet up there in Massachusetts. And that's what I ran on nearly 2-1, you know. And they said, well, you got to talk to the DCCC. I said, Delaware County Community College? I mean, that's how naive I was. Anyway, so I called to my party, said they didn't want me, and they had a candidate.
A conversation with the chairman.
Anyway, I get down there to Congress and I just want to work on this issue with the leading member of the majority of the Armed Services Committee. So I go across and I just went into the Republican cloakroom and I asked if he was there, and every head went up, but they answered me at least. But
right.
I was a little bit beginning to get to, because I was there in 2007 or so, but by the time I left, you can begin to see this easing back over time. And so, yeah, things changed. They did. And that's part of the reason why I was able to work things through. But it gets back to what you said, Michael. You get down there on that level and you can talk with people and listen to people. And all of a sudden, it's like the military. My gosh, we got everybody there.
Right, right.
I just cared if they cared to do their job competence, but you had to come to an agreement on how to do it. And I really do think the analogy is not wrong. The choices Miles points out is this. We really are in danger of having a real destruction done to our democracy if we do not happen to have people that all Americans, while not necessarily voting for you, will actually say, I can trust that guy. One of my proudest photographs is after my 10th healthcare town hall on the Affordable Care Act, and the Delaware County Tea Party Patriots asked for a photograph with me. They didn't vote for me, but they didn't not trust me as though I was alien or something. And to me, that still goes back to it. So beginning with the grassroots, I think, is key. But eventually, you move mountains in that Senate or that House, and eventually you're going to have to get to that. But starting at the bottom is really not the bottom in terms of
sure.
And I think the Republican Party does that pretty darn well. Do you want my frank opinion? When I was in Pennsylvania there, they seem to understand, whether it's judiciary or whether it was a state house, that if you could kind of manage to get the right number in, you could do what Miles is about, gerrymandering. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So eventually you got to get into that, because that's where a lot of the action is today, because of the stalemate to a large extent in Washington.
Well, that's just developing the strategery, as I like to say. Michael,
one number I want to throw out there, and it's why having folks like Joe on our forward leadership circle has been immensely and helpful to us, is really seeing that whole field of the opportunity. I mean, a lot of folks get way too focused on the national races. There's only a tiny handful of national races when you talk about elected positions in this country. There are 500,000 elected positions in the United States. And what'll shock people is that in 2020, something like 70% of those of the positions on the ballot only had one person you could vote for. So to Joe's point, that's single party rule. And it's not because there aren't potential competitors. It's because in one place or another, the party has so boxed out competition that no one's even bothering to run. That's where we need to start. We need to start with those hundreds of thousands of positions across the country that are uncompetitive because they've just been locked into one party or the other. And introducing a new choice can shake up the system. And a big example of that, of course, is what we're doing right now in Utah, in the U.S. Senate race. In Utah, right. You have a state right. Where
with Evan McMullen's race out there.
Yeah, Mike Lee, who's running for Senate there, was one of the 10 safest U.S. senators in the country. Why? Because a Democrat hasn't won statewide in Utah in that race in 50 years. But by getting the Democrats to team up with an independent like McMullen, Mike Lee is now one of the 10 most vulnerable senators. It's an example of what we're going to do down at the grassroots is find more places where you can disrupt entrenched individuals and bring more competition onto the ballot.
We're having a great conversation with two of the leaders of the new Forward Party, one Miles Taylor and former Congressman Joe Sestak. We will be back after this.
All right, America, you asked for it. Or maybe you didn't. But either way, we have to talk. You're just in kind of a crazy place right now, Mr. and Mrs. USA. So we're going to sit down a couple of times a week and work it out between us. The way Americans do. On a podcast. Hosted by Beowulf Rocklin. Weird name. Weird news. Weird politics. Weird country. Facepalm America. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having this great conversation with Miles and Joe, and we want to pick up and bring all of this to a finer point, given the news that's been roiling the country for the last 36 or so hours with the execution of a warrant for a search of the property of former President Donald Trump down in Mar-a-Lago for documents, classified documents that the president took with him when he left office back in January of 2021. And there's been a lot of noise around this process, certainly from Republicans, Kevin McCarthy now declaring he wants to investigate the DOJ. And Democrats largely staying silent. Like, we were having such a great week talking about the votes that the president was winning in the House and Senate. But this is serious business. As I say to folks who have been, chomping on this, it is hard to get a warrant, period. Okay, just as a general course, it's not an easy thing to get. These judges have to sign off on it. It is triply hard to get a warrant for the, to execute a search of a former president's home. So the idea that the State Department, Justice Department took its time, vetted this, got a judge to sign off on it, tells us that there's something serious here. Does this rot, is my word, of that we see coming out of the Trump era, permeating our nation's politics, is that something that has the ability to create a stranglehold on voters out there such that your efforts get stymied because everyone are so landlocked now with this, pro-white nationalist, anti-government sort of fascist view of this new America they want to create, that the idea of breaking through becomes harder. And even if you break through, the Democratic Party is not so much the challenge as the monsters that are standing in front of you that are part of this Trump Party, which I won't even refer to as the Republican Party anymore, because that's that. I think there was a funeral for that about a year ago, so that's done. How do you guys play in this environment to make a cut through and to prove to people, guys, this is why we're doing this?
Yeah, I mean, I go ahead, Joe. If you want to jump in?
Look, I think that's a challenge? You bet I do. I mean, it's like going on to a real real downtrodden mutinous ship and taking it over. And it's tough. But the only way you're going to go and do that is not by beating up on them. I mean, you know, a bad reaction to something is just makes you feel antagonistic. You got to look at it from a viewpoint they might appreciate. And so for me, how I would talk about it on this, let's just take this example. I said, look, you know, I've had to deal with top secret material. Actually, I've had to deal with a lot more than that with me. Only 8 people in the government knew about it. I mean, I had control of stuff and nuclear weapons that, you know, you neither confirmed nor denied.
Mm-hmm.
It was it. And you think I didn't want to get that guy who leaked out WikiLeaks and those secrets killed people? We classify things for a reason so we men and women are safe. And I'd step back. That's why we went after Zarawi after all these years, to let him know. Much like Republicans can accept and understand that you follow up on the law and hold someone accountable so it's a deterrent to the next one.
Right.
So I think it was wrong that when the Secretary of Defense Deutsch in a Democratic administration took secret material on his computer back, they went to hold him accountable.
Yeah.
I don't think it was wrong that a man I truly respected, Sandy Berger, National Security Advisor, went off. Because if that stuff gets in the wrong hands, then it hurts us. Right now, no one's saying whether he needs to be penalized or not, but they are saying, after going through a same process, the same institutions as the other two gentlemen or WikiLeaks,
right,
that, hey, look, it looks like there is some top secret material took. Now we've got to find out what the damage is and was it conscious or not conscious. I think that type of accountability is so important.
But it seems to me, gentlemen, that nobody wants to, or at least on the Republican side, either be accountable or hold anyone accountable. We've seen the reaction to this this warrant being executed. Trump himself referring to it as a raid. They broke into my safe. A, it was not a raid. B, they didn't break in anything. They opened it. And yet you have the sycophants out there that grab that narrative and keep churning it. How do you break through in your formation that shows this is the port in this storm you want to come to? That if we're ever going to change this system from what it is devolving into, we're past what it's become, right? And we're into what it's devolving into. How do you break through that? How do you establish the ground, the beachhead, in a sense that will let people know it's okay to be here. It's okay to come here. You know, one of the leaders, you know, Andrew Yang, who's a part of this, is getting ripped on Twitter now for his seemingly sort of like, well, you know, Trump, I don't like Trump, but you know, this, you know, as he put it, raid on his home will just turn people off. I'm like, well, dude, no one's above the law here. I don't care what kind of appeal an individual has. I don't care how you want to characterize it. The reality of it is the rule of law must still stand for something. And one party, the Republican Party, seems to have turned that on its head and applies it only in limited circumstances when it's favorable to their players. The other party seems to be incapable of articulating it in a way that's believable for people, because without getting caught in the political quagmire. How do you create a space just around a subject like that, that, mm-hmm. that people can say, let me take a look here and see, because this may be a little bit safer and better than where I'm hanging out right now?
Well, Michael, it's a really good question, because I think this episode itself shows why we need alternative options in our political system. People are so scared of how extreme our political environment has gotten that they want that safe harbor, as you describe it. Mm-hmm. They want a tribe of the tribeless that is the I'm not crazy coalition. Right. The folks that say, let's move.
I know
past
it's not
that.
Me. It's got to be them.
Yeah. And you know, your comment on Twitter is that's really I think that's where a lot of it starts, right? Is Twitter is not America.
Right.
In fact, if anything, Twitter is the thing that exemplifies the problem. It's a place where folks that increasingly are veering to the extremes go to yell louder and louder and louder. Now, you know, you mentioned a tweet from one of the folks affiliated with Forward, Andrew Yang. I think what Andrew's saying is actually something that is, you know, I know you've discussed on cable news and lots of others, which are the political ramifications of these types of actions when it comes to the ex-president. It's not to say he shouldn't be held accountable. I firmly believe
right.
that no one's above the law. And I strongly suspect the Justice Department had very good cause to undertake this warrant. But as a lot of us have been discussing for weeks on cable television, will the Justice Department prosecute or not prosecute Trump for other things like January 6th? And there's been debate from both sides of the aisle about whether that prosecution will further divide the country or bring us some closure. Now, I think a lot of folks, I'll speak for myself here. I think regardless of what the outcome is, you just have to follow the law, right? You
right,
can't decide to prosecute or not prosecute, depending on the outcome. But I have seen folks, you know, in your party, the Republican Party, who aren't Trump lovers, go say, this is one of those examples where the Justice Department should think seriously about not prosecuting to not divide the country. I don't agree with that at all. I think similar with this raid, what you've already seen, I think proves Andrew's point. Within hours of this raid, you had the leader, the Republican leader in the House, come out and say, the FBI has been weaponized. Now, again, let me make clear, I'm not saying the FBI should just follow the facts, follow right. the law. I suspect they did the right thing here. But already, this raid has been politicized, and you've got tens of millions of Americans who are now going to believe Donald Trump and Kevin McCarthy that the FBI is just a political institution. That is terrifying to me. And it's why we need a cohort of people like Forward and others who say, hey, look, folks, let's fortify our institutions. Let's trust our institutions. Let's not, on one side or the other, politicize things like the Justice Department, and the FBI. Let's let them do their jobs. And I'm really scared that we've gone way past that environment. And you see it with the stolen election lie, is millions of people now believe this massive, big lie because someone like Donald Trump said it. I think that's really scary. That's why we need level-headed leaders. And just the Democratic Party alone is not going to pull us back
right,
from what's happening
right,
on the far right.
Right.
Joe?
Michael,
go ahead, Joe.
Wait, no, go finish, Miles.
Oh, I was just going to say, the last thing I was going to add to that is, you know, look, I would love to believe if I was convinced that the Democratic Party could save us forever from Trump and his apprentices, I'd be the first to say, well, let's all go become Democrats. But they didn't. In fact, there are folks who are saying that, though.
I mean, that is a narrative that's out there as well. It's like, at least at this stage and in this phase, I mean, I know, you know, some folks that you know, in the Republican ecosystem that believe it's better to be a Democrat now than not. I can't philosophically make that leap. For me, there's yep. more to it than just putting the label on my lapel. But there is that narrative out there, which again is one more level of headwind that Forward faces in trying to make the points that you would just make is, hey, you know, this is the place where democracy begins anew and refreshes mm-hmm. itself. Joe, you were going to say
it's somewhat similar. Look, I was impressed by the approach that the change of the not overruling the Constitution in Kansas on abortion occurred. Forget the outcome. What they did is they got one out of five Republicans to understand not that the other side was evil, but rather, and frankly, I think you should respect either side. I mean, when people ask me about abortion, I say, I just don't know what the answer is. I'm sorry, I'm Catholic, but I just... Till he tells me, I just got right. I don't want the government to. And that's essentially what they said out there is, look, this is government overreach. They put themselves in the other party's viewpoint. And they said, and not just the party, but the culture and where they've grown up. And it's a good culture. They really did solve that problem of the Wild West in terms of danger, et cetera, and yet not always the right way, but and there's a real legacy there, and they put themselves there, and that's how they did it. Again, I come back to your point about grassroots approach initially with this. You're not just going to win like that all of a sudden over the, you know, Twitter's just the, you know, survival of the briefest. You're not going to win that. What you've got to be able to do is go out and talk, often at the senior junior level and approach it. And it's going to be a hard work of just putting yourself, not criticizing the other side. They got there for a reason, but putting yourself and explaining why your opponent, not in just constantly coming down on them. You can't find a word that I've ever said putting down the Republican Party, not one. You can find me criticizing the policies of them. And when I ran against Pat Toomey, because Senator Specter wouldn't run against do me in a primary, I offered him a debate. We had a beer afterwards. Now, he was tough, don't get me wrong. But right. It was a way that it was his policies I disagreed with. And we have to be able to show, I think, why there's a better way than disrespecting our FBI. I mean, that's essentially what he is, as Miles has pointed out. And this is a party of law and order. We should be able to work that and present that. It doesn't mean we're going to win tomorrow. It's gotten so bad, it is going to take us a decade maybe to change this. But Huey Long and his followers didn't last forever. Neither did Father Coughlin that FDR right. had to go against. There is a moment in time, however, we're on a precipice of how many disciples might come up. And that is why you have to go, as they did in Kansas, in a very populist movement, they went to the people and found out what their true will was on this abortion issue, not what the state representatives were saying. And that to me is the only approach.
Part of this is also going to be one thing I'd add, Michael, is what I'd call coalition campaigning. You know, one thing that the Forward Party is not is an effort to just go beat Democrats and beat Republicans willy-nilly because Forward's the only way. In fact, we're calling ourselves an open party because there's going to be a lot of instances where you see an organization like Forward teaming up with sensible centrists from the other two major parties. So for instance, we're not running candidates in the midterms, but you're going to see Forward out there putting money and resources behind the handful of remaining moderate Republicans and a number of vulnerable moderate Democrats who it's really, really important get reelected because they're holding their own parties accountable to keep them from swinging the other direction. We're in this to make sure that all parties in the political system come back to the common sense part of the spectrum. And so we're going to do what we can to put our thumb on the scales to help good guy Republicans and good guy Democrats win their races. And in places where it looks like there's an entrenched extremist, well, yeah, let's go put a Forward candidate on the ballot to try to get that extreme person out of there. I mean, I got to go back to Evan McMullen's race in Utah, because if we didn't have an independent enter that race, we would have ended up with someone who helped Donald Trump plot his coup, pretty much automatically reelected to the United States Senate. Now, we don't know how November's going to turn out, but it's that act of courage, someone yeah. willing to go outside the two-party system that we need to see replicated across the country and to give people like Evan McMullen a base of support so that they can go do the courageous thing and challenge people who deviated far from the majority view of Americans. So over time, that's what we hope to do, is build that foundation so more people can make that courageous choice to go represent the real views of the people.
If nothing else, it makes the race that much more dynamic and people have a greater interest in the Democratic small d outcome of that election than they otherwise would have, because, well, this is a Republican state, the Republican's going to win, I'm staying home, I'm not participating. Now it's a different conversation because voters see that they have a way, a more direct way in which they can make a difference in the outcome. And that's one of the strengths of the arguments that a lot of us put out in the 2020 cycle. You know, myself included, having taken the bold step of breaking with the party as a former national chairman to stand up for democracy and not the party. What you're looking at in Utah, what you're looking at in Washington State with some of the local races there and elsewhere are candidates who are sort of breaking that mold and refashioning it in a way that voters see themselves, regardless of their party or ideology, better reflected and much more willing to get engaged. And that's all good for the country and for voters in the main. So, well, gentlemen, I've kept you way past your bedtime, and I really do appreciate your taking time to drop in and give us a quick politics 101 on the Forward Party and the effort. Certainly, we'll have you back and want to, as we get into the fall campaign and beyond that, see how it's going and how Americans are gauging it, because I think it's important work, as you know, Miles. And so it's valuable. It's valuable and vital to have more attention paid to it, more focus on it, in a way that, again, people see this as, in this particular storm that we're seeing play out in our democracy, there is a port that they can pull up to, get off that ship and take a different kind of ride, you know. But we'll see how that plays out. Really do appreciate you gentlemen coming on and spending time with us and having the conversation. Miles Taylor and his great work as the co-CEO of Forward, and of course, former Congressman Joe Sestak, who is again, one of those leaders out there is putting it on the line for his country. And we appreciate that as always, Joe. Really do.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having me aboard.
Absolutely.
So thanks, Michael.
Oh, absolutely, guys. That does it for this conversation, folks. You know it's a joy when I have you come and play with us here on our little playground. If you like the podcast, please tell a friend. I know it makes me feel good when you do. And give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps me improve the work that we're doing here to know what you think about what I'm doing. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. The podcast Twitter at Steele_podcast. Follow Joe on Twitter at Joe Sestak. And Miles at Miles Taylor USA. Until next time, be safe. Enjoy the summer. And don't drink too much crazy Kool-Aid, all right? Because I think y'all had enough. It's time to cut off. See ya.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.